Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome, everyone. We're really excited. First of all, bienvenidos. Cooking in Mexico from A to Z. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
Exactly. And we are excited. We're launching season four of Cooking in Mexico from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network, as you can imagine. And we are so excited because we're going to talk about a topic that I think it deserves the attention and the recognition, because it's such a vital part and such an instrumental part of Mexican food and culture. And of course, we're going to be talking about Afro-Mexican food and culture and its influence, how it's permeated all things in Mexico and gone beyond its borders. We're super excited and beyond honored to have this unbelievable guest that we have today. I'm talking about, of course, Professor Sagrario Cruz Carretero. And she is the professor at the Institute of Anthropology of the University of Veracruz. She's a pioneer in the studies about Black culture and Black population in Mexico, which I think is super important. And she's received many different accolades. One of the twice received the Gonzalo Aguilar Beltran Award for historical research in the African origin of the people of Veracruz. And of course, she's an author of books and a lecturer. And she is here to really enlighten my mom and I about the Afro-Mexican presence in Mexico and the world, and also its culture and how, and the food and how it's influenced and put its tentacles everywhere. So we are really happy to have you. Muchísimas gracias, profesora. We're happy to have you.
Bienvenida, Sagrario. Bienvenida.
So please talk to us a little bit about your interest level at its core, at its origin. What was this? Is this part of your background? Where did it start?
Thank you for having me here, and thank you for the invitation. Well, I started doing research about African presence in Mexico many years ago when I traveled to Cuba, and I realized the culture I was looking at that time in the island was very similar to the culture of my hometown, my family. They cook similar food. They speak in similar ways. Actually, music, the lyrics of the songs were similar. So I was determined at that time to do a research about African presence in Cuba. And what I decided at that time was to come back and start a research in Veracruz. Actually, I realized that my family was Black because I showed up some pictures, some photos to a group of Cuban friends, and they told me, oh, your father and grandpa are Blacks. And I said, no, we are from Veracruz, just that. And they told me, no, your father and grandpa are Jabaos, that it's anonymous or classification of color in Cuba. And I was shocked at that time because I never thought my family was Black. And when I come back and I asked my grandpa, why you never told me we are Black? And he told me, no, we are not. We are morenos. We are not Black. We are morenos. It's a different condition. And an aunt told me, well, the guilty one of that we are Black is the Cuban great-grandma. So I started looking the Cuban great-grandma, and I never found her. What I found was a very interesting genealogical tree with African descendants who arrived to Mexico. And was a very interesting and personal quest and redefined my own identity and the identity of my family. And it's, as I think, is the general condition of many Afro descendants in Mexico, that they don't realize, they don't see in the mirror this African heritage. And things are changing now, because the recent legal process and the awareness of being Afro-descendants are different.
You know, when I was doing research in Veracruz, nobody knew that they were Black. I mean, you could see that they were Black, but they did not know anything about the food. They had absolutely no idea about how, the influence they've had on the music. So I can totally relate to that with you.
Exactly, exactly. There is a vast cultural features of African origin. The problem is that we are illiterated to see them, to read them. There is, I can name them one by one, and you will be surprised. There is a sacred geography and a very vast ethnobotanical use, sacred medicinal for cooking, different animals, fruits, plants, words in Spanish, different elements of the African heritage that are invisible for regular Mexicans.
Amazing. Yeah. So let's go over to the food and find out what do you think the principal ingredients are that are Afro-descendant?
I started paying attention to food about 25 years ago when Raquel Torres, my mentor, my professor, my gran maestra, asked me for help to do a book of recipes. And she worked together with Doris Cariaga. Mm-hmm. And I took them to the Black communities where I was worked. I was doing field work at that time. And some of the ingredients that Raquel and Doris noticed and underlined at that time was plantain, yuca, malanga, rice and beans, soups like gandinga, that is a soup made of chitlins and vegetables that is prepared for festivities. But around these ingredients, I found out many more related to alcohol preparation. Actually, alcohol and sugar is very close related to African presence, because in colonial times there was a legal prohibition that is established only Africans could be used in mining, sugar plantation, and fabric factories. Why? Because they were lethal. The average of live in of life in that time working in these enterprises were no longer than 50 years. So in a legal process of protection of indigenous since the 16th century, they established indigenous children work in these enterprises. So the sugar production is close related to Africans. And preparations with alcohol, with sugar alcohol, that we call in Spanish alcoholaturas, are close related to African heritage. They knew the exact point of production of sugar, the exact point of production of alcohol, and the mixture with fruits, plants, production of these wines made of sugarcane alcohol are close related to African heritage.
Is there a particular career that or job that Afro-Mexicans are involved in these days, in the present?
Actually, if you look at the census, the 2020 census, you can see that for the first time in history, there was included a question in the census for self-ascription. Mm. And thanks to this census, we have a panorama where the Afro-Mexicans are located now. Mm. And we have a very interesting results that Afro-Mexicans are the largest population is in Mexico City.
Mm.
So we have more than about 600,000 in Mexico City. It's a very large population. But in proportion, the states with the largest population is Guerrero, Oaxaca, and Veracruz.
Yes.
Actually, the second in total number is Veracruz. First, Mexico City, the second, Veracruz. So we are talking about urban population. So we have to eliminate this idea that they are farmers.
Yes.
They are working in urban areas with internet, but the problem is that we are blind to see these African heritage in Mexico City, and we have a very overwhelming idea that Mexico is indigenous and Spanish. So we have black population in proportion, larger black population in proportion in Guerrero and Oaxaca, mainly in Costa Chica. And many scholars who are coming to do research in Mexico, they are going to this area.
Yes.
And we have many studies in this area, but what's going on in Mexico City or what's going on in Veracruz? And we have to consider the African presence of the diaspora. The diaspora, it means all these African origin population who emigrated in 20th century.
Yes.
So we have very recent immigration with all these immigrants who crossed along Mexico and established, for example, in Baja California.
Yeah. And I think it's a very good point because you mentioned where are some of the enclaves and where are people that you would find Afro-Mexicans in Mexico. You mentioned Oaxaca, Guerrero, Veracruz, all of those beautiful communities. I think at its beginning, obviously because of the slave trade, sadly, a lot of that influence initially came to Mexico. But I think it's an interesting point that you're saying that now, because of people's immigration going north from other parts of Latin America, they're starting to establish communities and having more of a new recent influence of Afro influence in Mexico.
How different are their customs and their food, you know, from Oaxaca, Veracruz, Chiapas, or Mexico City? I mean, is there any difference in the cuisine?
Of course, and I think the touch is the indigenous influence where they have established contact. It's different, the influence of the indigenous from Oaxaca, from north of Veracruz in the region of Tamiahua, from central Veracruz with the influence of Totonacs, or the south part with the influences of Popolucas. The touch and the essence is different. The same happens in Chiapas or between the Mascobos. The interesting thing is to do field work, collect the recipes, but more important, collect the relationship with the cocineras,
yeah,
with the cooks. I have to add another black community that has been put aside that are the black Seminoles, mm-hmm, the Mascogos, established in Coahuila. And another state that in recent times has organized and had to try to visibilize their African heritage is Chiapas,
mm-hmm,
with a very interesting mixture with indigenous and Germans. So we don't have the final point of the Afro-Mexican history. Tabasco is now rescuing their black cuisine and their ritual traditions with the ritual of cacao, the cacao, no, the mother cacao, and relating this connection with the cacao and the African heritage. And we have a very large evidence in inquisitional processes, arguing the black woman used chocolate to do a sorcery process. So we have to pay attention to different aspects of the black cuisine. For example, in recent times, people get surprised when I say the banana leaf is an African heritage used in the tamales, because many people think, oh, the Oaxaqueño tamal is very Mexican. Well, yes, it's Mexican, but has an African grandma. And it's interesting because more and more people are paying attention to these different roots of the Mexican food. It's not only this monolithic idea that Mexican food is indigenous and Spaniards. Besides, if we think about the Iberian roots, we have to think about Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Many recipes with African heritage were introduced thanks to Portuguese, because they were one of the most important slave traders in the Americas. So when we talk about African food, we think they arrived with Africans, but we don't think that they also arrived through the Portuguese who established in New Spain, and they were a large population. Actually, many words in the Spanish that we speak in Veracruz is Spanish is Portuguese. Mm. Or dishes, very simple dishes like pambazo, that everybody knows pambazo, it's Portuguese. It means pan bajo.
Yeah. It's actually almost like a biscuit.
Exactly.
I think it was you who gave me that wonderful recipe for the pork and pumpkin sauce. It has become very popular, you know, in all my parties and everywhere. Because, you know, in this website, in this our podcast, Aaron and I are exploring the different influences mm-hmm. of Mexican food. Exactly what you're saying that you're going to be doing, we have been doing. In fact, we have somebody of Lebanese mm-hmm. extraction joining us. And we're looking for an expert in Chinese food and see how it has influenced Mexican food.
Or simple, a very common dish, the rice and beans. Mm-hmm. Rice with black beans.
Yeah, Aaron has a beautiful recipe.
That is called casamiento.
Or moros y cristianos.
Moros y cristianos. Mm-hmm. We have this common denominator in very many, many areas with African heritage. Why? Because we think the rice has an Asiatic origin. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that there was an African rice that was black, mm-hmm. that actually is black. So,
oh, really?
My hypothesis is that Africans wanted to get darker this white rice, mm. and that is why they added mm. these black beans of American origin.
I have to tell you that Aaron makes the best frijoles con casamiento. He makes the absolute best. It's wonderful.
Yeah, the moros y cristianos. No, because I learned from great Cuban señoras that told me how to do it, where you put you don't ever have to measure the water. All you have to do is stir your sofrito, put your bean liquid, black beans, and then once the spoon stands up, you know you have enough rice to water. That's an old school technique. So nunca tienes que medir lo que es el agua. Nada más, you know, you just add the bean liquid, and when the spoon stands up, you're good. And then you cover that with banana leaves, and then you cook in the oven. Because when you cook rice in the oven, it actually cooks more evenly because you have heat from all sources, you know? So I think it was some of those simple techniques. And, you know, this subject is very, very important to me because my grandfather is Afro-Mexican, you know? The grandfather
where was
of my
he
son.
From?
His name is Elizabeth, Francisco Mora Catlett, and Elizabeth Catlett was the amazing sculptress that moved to Mexico City and studied in the taller with Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera.
I know the Mora Kahlo, yeah. Of course.
And Elizabeth Kahlo married Francisco Mora, a Mexican artist. And
exactly.
That is my the mother of my child's grandmother. So
yeah.
So that this subject really touches me as well, you know.
Of course.
You know, so as far as, you know, my son's blood and everything and all of our heritage, so.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You mentioned plantain. I want to underline the importance of plantain because in the black areas where the wheat of powder was very, very scarce, actually bread wheat bread was exclusive for Spaniards. Mm-hmm. African descendants used plantain in substitution of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they produce different kinds of bread, sweet breads or desserts with the with roots like yuca, malanga, camote, sweet potato, ñame, called buñuelos. That they are very similar to acarajé, mm-hmm. from Brazil.
Yeah.
All these frituras with deep oil has black origin, and almost nobody knew.
How did you all discover that?
Oh, the text of Harris is published in the Scattered Africa, and different others authors refer how the deep fried oil products of food has black origin. And this adaptation of deep oil fried la fritura en aceite profundo, mm-hmm. has been adapted to the antojería of Mexico. How they process the chitlins in deep fried oil.
And that's interesting because deep frying was not something that was very typically Mexican, right, Mom? You would shallow fry. The idea of submerging something into oil was something that was brought from.
Of course, you have the fried chicken,
yeah.
The fried chicken that is very black. Well, it's the same in the Mexican food, and indigenous and mixed race Mexicans adapted this process of cooking with antojería of maíz, but originally we have this process of this. I'm salivating, of this food made of yuca, camote that they produced a bread like a donut, and then they
feed
it with sugar cane, dark sugar cane honey, and the use of anise. I don't know if anise is the same in English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the use of anise is a particular ingredient that almost nobody pay attention to. Anise not only gives flavor to the food, but also is a sacred ingredient of protection. Protection against bad spirits and against sorcery.
And bad breath.
bad breath, right. And we are going to find this ingredient in the black food, particularly the black food from the Cuenca del Papaloapan in southern part of Veracruz. Another interesting technique is the double cooking technique.
Mm-hmm.
You have an oven with that is an improvised oven. Mm-hmm. With a clay pot, and you put a heat in the bottom and a heat in the top with charcoal.
Oh, I've never seen that.
You never seen that?
What are some of the dishes? No, what dishes? That's totally new to me. Tell me about it.
They in between the mascogos, they prepare cornbread, and between the blacks of Coyolillo, they prepare camote or plantain bread.
Camote, sweet potatoes, just for everyone that's listening. Camote, sweet
right.
potato.
Sweet potato.
Like, for instance, in Tlacotalpan, we had some garnachas made, the masa mixed with camotes and a picadillo.
And with plantain. And it's interesting because this addition of plantain to the dough, it's because starving. This was the way to enlarge the bowl of dough. Because Afro descendants didn't have access to corn dough like other groups like the white, the Spaniards.
And why is that?
Why is that? Because we have a social pyramid where and you can identify that the bottom is darker. The bottom.
I know, but what I'm saying is why didn't they have corn?
Oh, well, the corn why couldn't was they well have accepted corn? Between the African descendants immediately.
I know, but why were they not allowed to have it?
Oh, because they were poor and they didn't have their own properties to cultivate the corn. So because they were slaves or they free workers, but they didn't have access to land and to produce their own corn.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And they had to enlarge the corn dough bowl with plantain, and it's a very interesting touch of the antojería or the production of antojitos in the Cuenca de Papaloapan, and a particular ingredient is anise. Anise, plantain, and the process in deep oil fried is a very interesting touch of this antojería.
How about the combination of cilantro seeds and cumin?
The cilantro seeds, I haven't seen them in a particular recipe.
Coriander seeds is also what they're called, coriander.
The coriander, yeah, but no, not that I have seen. I haven't seen that. But the cumin is very common.
Cumin, yeah.
Cumin is, it actually, I'm very aware of cumin because my father hated cumin. So my mother had to stop using cumin in all the recipes. Yeah, so it is very, very frequent the use of cumin. Another recipe that I want to underline is the use of cacao in a beverage that is common in Costa Chica and in Veracruz and is popo.
Yeah.
Popo means foam of fog in Nahuatl. So what they drink is the foam. Is what is popo? It's a traditional beverage prepared with cocoa, broken
corn.
Cocoa nut. The chocolate nut is broken and is smashed in the metate with rice, and is mixed with a plant that is a saponifera, that means that produce foam like a soap. And the mixture produce a very fresh and delicious beverage that is prepared in sacred days, in festivities days, like Virgin of Candelaria or in Costa Chica in the day of Señor Santiago, in a very important festivities days.
What was the name of the plant that produces the foam?
It's similar to an orchid.
An orchid.
I don't recall, Sarella. Mm. But what I'm paying attention here is how Afro-descendants adopted and adapted the chocolate that is originally indigenous mm-hmm. and now is prepared in festivity and ritual days. And you drink the foam, only the foam, no the liquid. What you are drinking, it's like a breath, no? You know, mm. you inhalate.
Yeah, and she's beautiful. Yeah, like, oh, well, yeah.
Yes, wow. Exactly. So it's interesting to me to establish a relationship with the use of this beverage and the accusation of inquisitional trials that Black women enchanted mm-hmm. Spaniards yeah. in colonial times. And that is why Spaniards were so crazy around Black women that this is absurd.
Mm-hmm. So that explains it, baby.
Exactly. Oh. Estaba embrujado yo.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And thanks to that, the church, the Catholic Church in different areas of the Americas prohibited the Africans showed up their hair. That is why they started using the turban, because they thought the hair was the cause white people mm-hmm. fall in love of these Africans. Mm-hmm. That is why in all parts of the Americas, the colonized Africa and Europe, Africans cover their hair because the church thought that it was part of this enchantment Africans produce. And that is why Morelos, the independence leaders of Mexico, has this blanket on his head. And because he was African descendant and he was obeying this law that prohibited the exposition of the African hair. So it's interesting to establish this relationship with food, history, ethnography, because suddenly you say, oh, that's
yeah,
this
I get
why.
It. Now you make the connection.
I get it. Yeah. It makes sense.
And where does the Santeria come in?
Santeria is a religious practice that is predominantly in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Here in Mexico, I haven't found evidences of Santeria, but in recent times, thanks to immigration of Caribbean people. But in ethnographical record from Mexico, I only have found religious practice between a group that is called Espiritualistas Trinitarios Marianos, that they get in trance because the spirit descend on them and they cure. They is a healing.
Well, maybe they could cure me.
Religion.
Maybe they could cure me.
Yeah, probably. But in other practices, in Black communities, I haven't found this.
Wow. Well, this is a topic, Mom, that we can continue to touch upon over and over again. I think it's important to have some follow-up. And as far as Professor Sagrario, how can people get in touch with you, continue the conversation, maybe ask us questions, right, Mom, for some follow-ups?
Well, you can contact me. I'm on Facebook with my name, Sagrario Cruz Carretero. Some of my publications are available online. You can get my book on Amazon, The African Presence in Mexico from Yanga to the Present. That is the catalog of the exhibition that I presented in the National Museum of Mexican Art in Chicago that was very successful. It was on exhibit. The exhibit was presented during almost 6 years in 11 museums in Mexico and the United States. Mm-hmm. So if you, there are many other publications, Africa in Florida, that's another publication.
And remind us all about the event, the Fogones Mex, where you're having all these beautiful scholars come to speak about Mexican food and culture. When is that going on?
Exactly. Well, it's going to be online, and we start on February 19th. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be 17 professors who are going to be talking about different heritage of Mexican food. Indigenous, different ethnic groups, the African heritage, actually the most important is that we are going to help you to develop a process of research in terms of food in Mexico.
Wonderful.
Are there any contemporary Afro-Mexican restaurants exclusively?
Not that I know. That you can find out exclusively Afro-Mexican dishes.
Mm-hmm.
What you find out is restaurants that are preparing Afro-Mexican food, and probably they don't present like that, but it's Afro-Mexican food. This antojería that I'm telling to you.
Snack foods.
All the food from Cuenca del Papaloapan. Mm-hmm. The way of prepare seafood, actually all the coctelería of cocktails of seafood, you can see that.
We'll put up a list of all the your books and articles, and eventually we're going to do a page, you know, with all this information, because we want to support you.
Thank you.
And I want to urge everybody to read this article that she has on Facebook about the different ways that blacks identify themselves as morenos, negros, prietos, you know, because that's a fun article. So you just keep an eye out for more articles. I actually have an article on African food in up on the website that I wrote for the Los Angeles Times a long time ago. So there is some information on this fascinating culture that is becoming so important, especially this month, which is Black History Month.
Yes.
Exactly.
So we wanted to thank you from the bottom of our hearts, Sagrario. You have been so beautiful with your presence and your knowledge, so generous. And this is what Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is all about, bringing topics that there might be some surface knowledge, but doing a deep dive. And your unbelievable well of knowledge has really uplifted and I think really informed a lot of our listeners, and as well as my mom and I. So we thank you profusely for that, and appreciate you being on the on our show and our podcast. And please always make sure that if you want to get more information, contact us, engage us at heritageradionetwork.com. You can go to obviously Cooking in Mexican from A to Z on HRN and find out more information and engage with our guests. So we're really grateful for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I appreciate this opportunity you give me to speak, because it's very important Mexicans dare to take out their black grandma from the closet.
Good for you.
Yeah. And be aware that we have a very, very deep root of African heritage. And we have to be proud of it.
Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Hasta luego.
Thank you so much.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.